Welcome to the Applied Policy Podcast, bringing you up-to-date insights on health policy and reimbursement progress that will improve lives by improving care. I'm Louisa Hart.
I'm Megan Basler. I'm a health policy associate and certified professional coder at Applied Policy.
The reason that I want to focus on medical codes today, I knew absolutely nothing about them. When I heard your presentation a couple of weeks ago, I don't think it is too strong to say that it was a revelation to me that medical codes are a linchpin of the healthcare system.
No, you're absolutely right, Louisa. I'm glad you enjoyed the presentation, by the way. So traditionally, medical coding is what you're thinking of when you go to the physician's office and you are seen by your physician and your provider takes notes on all of the different procedures and diagnoses that he's seeing during the visit. And then behind the scenes, the medical coder is serving kind of as the translator of that medical documentation. And this kind of bridges the gap between the clinical aspect of care and then the administrative functions. So it's totally crucial that the medical record is accurately recorded in alphanumeric codes, which is really vital for the efficiency, accuracy, and success of the healthcare organization and then our system as a whole. And this ensures that there's proper reimbursement and documentation of what precisely the patient received when they came to the provider that day.
So when I go to the doctor and there's discussion as I'm checking out between two people and I hear the word code, I should not be impatient because they're doing important work.
Exactly. So the code that they ultimately assign is going to have several implications, but one of the most important ones for the patient is coverage. So if the code is appropriate and medically necessary, then on the back end, the people in the insurance realm are going to be reviewing the document and making sure that there is coverage for everything that's reported and that it was done appropriately and compliantly.
And if there's a disconnect between what was done by the physician and what the payer thinks they are covering, then you have to go back to square one or at least maybe square three?
I think it depends. Generally, if there's a disconnect, there might be a delay in payment. There might also be a complete denial, in which case there's a whole appeals process where the healthcare administrator can go back and kind of challenge the validity of the claim, and then supporting documentation can be submitted to kind of provide more context for why that particular service was medically necessary.
So more specificity leads to greater chance of reimbursement. Is that overgeneralizing?
I wouldn't call it an overgeneralization. I think it is good to be as specific as possible. But reimbursement stands on its own. So at Applied Policy, we talk about coding, coverage, and payment as falling under the realm of reimbursement. So if you want a service or an item to be reimbursed, you need to have a specific code. You need to have a payment rate assigned to that code. And then you also need to have positive coverage determination.
So my understanding is that's where you come in. When your clients are having problems with, they don't perhaps have a code yet, maybe the code is not functioning appropriately, where do you come into that process to solve people's problems?
I think the devil's in the details with this, so that we can capture as much of the patient experience. It's kind of like telling a story. And when you're looking at medical documentation, you want to make sure that the patient's story is accurately represented. And this is important to the patient. It's also important to the provider and the payer. So there's multiple parties at stake. And I think that it's really essential, particularly when we're talking about reimbursement for services, that coding is complete and accurate and as precise as possible. And then when you're looking at things like the manufacturers behind medical devices, laboratory tests, you're facilitating payment and you're assigning a unique code that specifically describes that new technology. And if that's not captured by something that's already existing, then there's an outstanding need.
And is that where you actually generate a new code for whatever that device is, given the fact that it is brand new to the healthcare system?
You really have to make sure that your application is thorough and complete, and that you check all the boxes about, you know, what your code descriptor is going to say precisely. You have to validate that there's not an existing code that could be used. And just kind of as a side note, you know, depending on the circumstances, if there is an existing code, it's a lot less cumbersome to just go ahead and use that than to start from square one with a new application. So, you know, but applied policy can look at exactly what the client's needs are. We can do this analysis, figure out if there's an existing code or what the best path forward is to securing coding coverage and payment for whatever the procedure or item might be. And then we can prescribe various pathways to get to that end goal and assess the level of risk involved with each one. We can look, see what the options are, assign risk, assign a timeline, and then work with the client individually to ultimately push everything forward and hopefully end up with a positive coding coverage and payment decision.
The way you're describing this is that is the value added of applied policy, but also to your presence personally at applied policy. Is that right?
Applied policy has a lot of combined experience in the clinical side, the administrative side. We have a professional coder, me. We all work together and brainstorm the best way forward for each of our clients individually. We tailor our recommendations to them and their goals and their timelines. But yeah, this thorough understanding of how coding works, but also this is where I sort of diverge from what a traditional coder does. I'm looking at coverage policies, payment rates, similar products, similar codes to kind of assess where they fall in the landscape and ultimately find a coding solution that would be appropriate in their circumstances.
How often do you find yourself making up a totally new code as opposed to having an aha moment? This product or procedure or whatever it is that you're working with, there already is a code that matches this.
So I will say on the diagnostics vertical, we generally advise to find an existing CPT code to describe a test. However, over on the device side of applied policy, we're seeing a lot more applications because there are new and innovative technologies constantly being developed, and there is outstanding needs for codes that capture that particular technology completely.
And just to clarify, when someone comes to you with a new device and you do have to apply for a totally new code, that device cannot get reimbursed unless it has that code. Is that correct?
Generally, yes. There are ways to code with what we call unlisted codes, and those are reserved for these exact situations. However, they do cause a red flag on the claim when the auditors are reviewing claims to make sure that payment is appropriate. They're going to look at the medical documentation to see why there's an unlisted code on the claim, and then they're going to make a decision. Was this medically necessary?
So we're talking a time window here of what, maybe 2 years, 1 year before this product would really be, according to the client, ready for market?
Right. Even prior to FDA approval is best. Just because a product or a test is FDA approved does not mean that it's going to meet the reasonable and necessary criteria that Medicare sets for coding coverage and payment. So you can have a safe and effective device that's not paid.
Interesting. So you can potentially, if you get involved early, as you just mentioned, you can potentially prevent that from happening, or at least give the client a heads up as to what might happen?
Just as a hypothetical example, and something mm-hmm. that has happened and we've seen in Medicare documentation when they're reviewing these applications, you can have a product that has an application in with Medicare for a specific code and coverage and payment rate. And then you can see where Medicare notes, hey, your clinical trial that got you FDA approval didn't include anybody over the age of 65 in it. So that's the Medicare population. How are we going to cover something that doesn't even show any effectiveness within the Medicare population? Another big thing is diversity. What does the sample look like within the clinical trial? Are various age groups, ethnicities, health, social risks, is that all captured within the sample of the clinical trial, or should that population have been expanded to be more inclusive?
And is that the kind of thing that you flag, Megan, or is it your colleagues, you and your colleagues working together, look at something before it starts through the pipeline or gets to the end of the pipeline?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely a collaborative effort. And then we're lucky to have Dr. Bill Rogers on staff as our chief medical officer and also the director of our devices vertical. And he has many, many years of experience as a clinician, but also working for Medicare. And so he's able to give that clinical insight, especially when we're talking about controlled trials and clinical studies. And he can dissect that from a Medicare point of view and provide the client with specific feedback about how Medicare would receive this information and how it could be restructured to get a more favorable decision. We can even give tips as to how the clinical trial should be designed to reflect Medicare populations and to reflect the clinical utility standards that Medicare is looking at when they're reviewing these applications. These are situations where applied policy can intervene, but it's much, much better to start with a clean slate and move forward with a plan in place and with a positive direction, and hopefully, you know, we'll have a positive outcome.
Do you like doing this?
I love doing this. I really like to see the progress of, you know, when a client first approaches us, and then the brainstorming, the collaboration, getting to use my specific skills as a coder, and then ultimately seeing the end result play out in front of me is really rewarding.
For the latest developments in health policy and reimbursement issues, please go to our website at appliedpolicy.com. Thank you for listening.